several miles off the main highway, tucked away in a secluded canyon on prime vineyard property, stands a rustic barn that was built many decades before the vines around it were planted. In that barn, a sophisticated broadcast and recording studio has been built. The barn also has a well-hidden root cellar stocked with many of the world's most exceptional wines, only to be shared with guests who secretly come to offer their insights and tell their stories. Guests are sworn to secrecy and are shuttled to the studio aboard a John Deere tractor. Those who cannot make the journey in person are interviewed by satellite hookup, and sometimes the crew simply sneaks away with microphones in hand and interviews guests in barrel rooms, wine cellars, and other magical places. All of this is done like clockwork every single week, so that we can bring you another episode of Grape Encounters Radio.
Peel me a grape. Crush me some ice. Skin me a peach. Save the fuzz for my pillow. Talk to me nice. Talk to me nice. You've got to.
Today, Grape Encounters Radio comes to you from the beautiful city of San Antonio, Texas. We are at Napa Flats, just outside of downtown, and we're going to be talking all things wine, Texas. We have three great winemakers from the local wine region here just outside of San Antonio, and I couldn't be happier to be here. But before we get into our visit with the Texas winemakers and our discussion about all things Texas wine, I wanted to share a real big victory with you, something that happened just 2 days ago. If you listen to Grape Encounters, you know that we have been carrying a placard on behalf of the winemakers of the Finger Lakes of New York, who are going through not only some of the worst weather conditions that you can imagine, but also have been invaded by those who would put highly pressurized flat gas underneath Lake Seneca, the biggest of the Seneca Lakes, in the most prosperous wine region in New York, which last year was named Wine Region of the Year by Wine Enthusiast magazine. And you've got this pressurized gas that not only poses a real threat to the environment there, but poses a real threat to the wine industry as well. And so the good folks around Seneca Lake and beyond have been going out and literally laying down and blocking trucks from going in and putting that gas in these abandoned salt caves. Oh, by the way, when you pressurize salt caves, it makes the salt permeate up through the ground and into the lake. And now you have a saltwater lake, which is not bad news if you prefer saltwater fish to freshwater fish, but I digress. So anyway, it went before a judge, and amen, the judge has dropped all charges of civil disobedience against those protesters and says that they have a right to fight against what's going on at Seneca Lake. And so for the moment, we at least have a green light to move forward with a very concerted effort to try to stop this real tragedy at Seneca Lake. So that's a really big victory. And for all of you who have written to Governor Cuomo and other legislators in New York, I really appreciate it. And thanks for doing that. And keep up the good work. All right, we're going to introduce our first guest for the day. It's Eric Hilmy. He is of Hilmy Cellars. And Eric, welcome to the show. You're one of the millions of people, it must be millions by now, that gave up one career to get into winemaking, and you went live just a handful of years ago. Let's talk about it.
Love to. First of all, thanks for having me.
You did not bring any wine, by the way.
No, yeah, my bad. Sorry about that.
I have to tell one other story out of school. You are on your second beer. You had your second beer before you came on the air.
Irrelevant.
Irrelevant.
But you're not wrong.
And what is the famous saying that goes with beer and wine?
Well, so people have different versions, but essentially it says that it takes a lot of good beer to make great wine, which of course requires ego on the part of the winemaker, because the wine's always great, right? That's how it goes.
Exactly. So Hilmy Cellars is located really not too far from here. About how long would it take to
from
get?
From here, about, I think my GPS said about an hour and 8 minutes.
Hour and 8 minutes.
From this location.
And now you're doing two different things at the winery. You're making wines that are from estate-grown grapes, but you're also bringing in juice as well, are you not?
Well, not juice. We make wine first, of course, and that's actually one of the biggest conflicts, and I thank you for bringing it up. You know, in Texas, they say that if you don't like the weather, wait 5 minutes, it's going to change. We had a massive crop failure in the year of 2013, and I'm sure these guys that are sitting next to us can elaborate on that. But we're not going to fire our guys because we don't have fruit. That's the bottom line. And we make wine that we believe to be in our style from wherever it comes from. But the strong desire, bar none, is to make Texas wines, and that's our focus. 95% of what we do comes from about a half an hour of Lubbock, Texas, give or take.
There are two things that come to mind, and that is this, that Texas is number 7 in grape growing in this country, in the U.S.
I can buy that. But
Texas is, I believe, number 5 in wine production, which would then indicate to me that a lot of grapes are coming in because you can't. Or the grapes are being shipped out, one of the two, and I don't think it's the either.
If any growers are listening, that's a call to arms.
Yeah.
Plant more grapes. We'll buy them. Simple.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
All right. There was a bit of legislation that passed in Texas, and I want to say it was about 6 months ago, but I'm not good with dates, and it had to do with the Go Texan label and the idea that they were really clamping down now on how much Texas juice has to be in a bottle before that bottle can bear the Go Texan label.
I'm actually not educated on that.
I believe that's 75%.
Well, that's also state law.
Law now is 75%, but I think it was different before that, or at least people were getting away with putting a Go Texan label on a bottle of wine that didn't have Texas juice in it.
And for the record, the listeners, they need to know you can still do that. You can get away with it.
And get away with it?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, heck. And a lot of that juice comes from California, though, that does come into Texas. I know that there are a lot of winemakers that do that, but the movement toward estate-grown grapes in Texas, would you describe that as accelerating quite a bit now? Is it growing exponentially, would you say?
Well, I know that that my buddy Andy Timmons owns more than a square mile of grapes, and he's planting another 400 acres soon. So, yeah, I would say yes.
He's got one, and he's jumping to 400.
400 more, which is about, say, two-thirds, give or take, of a square mile.
That's a whole bunch of grapes.
It's a lot of grapes and a lot of work.
So let's talk about what you've chosen to grow at your operation, because you're growing some grapes that are not exactly what I would consider to be mainstream, nor would anybody else.
Well, sure.
Hopefully they will be when you're done with it.
We use fanciful names, what they call a fanciful name. We try to avoid the variety if nobody knows what it is. We're still trying to fight to get Sangiovese known in the world. And if you know Chianti, you know Sangiovese. But essentially, on the property, we have four varieties that we're focused on right now. It's Sangiovese, number one, ironically, of all varieties. And we got some Petit Verdot, which is not your first guess for Texas. And then Tannat, which my friend John Ravenberg here is also growing and doing a good job with, in my opinion. Yep. And then, of course, we have some Tempranillo, which, in my opinion, might be the money grape for Texas. I don't know. We're going to find out in another 50 years or so.
I certainly think it's hitting some home runs.
Oh, yeah.
In Texas.
You look at the hot places in the world and you say, hey, what have they done? You go to La Mancha, like Don Quixote land, you're talking about some serious Tempranillo.
So the difference between wine drinkers today and wine drinkers even 10 years ago, and I think the other winemakers here will probably agree on this fact, that wine drinkers have become much more adventurous than they've ever been before. And where they used to shy away from a particular varietal, now it's find me the most obscure varietal out there.
And bragging rights.
That may not be true in a lot of places, but it's certainly true in places like California and places that are making a lot of wine now. Do you find that to be true here as well?
Yes, sir. Without question, you get the bragging rights. It's almost like a medal of honor to say that I tried a Montepulciano as opposed to a Sangiovese, or I tried a Charbono, for one, or tried a, it's cool, And why not,
So what are they loving that you're growing and making?
Loving that we're making? That's a great question. I might have to ask these two.
Now I'm going to rephrase the question.
Go for it.
What are you loving that you're making?
What I'm loving is my Carignan right now. And I've got some Carignan from Buena Suerte up in Meadow, Texas. They got about, 2 acres of it that we have contracted. And we're doing, in my opinion, a very nice job with controlling the winemaking aspects. And we don't need to get too technical, but great balance, lovely acid, lovely tannin, lovely power, what the French call puissance. You might like this wine if you tried it in about a year.
All right. So if somebody was to take a jaunter up to your place tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. What's in the tasting room?
To the tasting room.
We got some Douze Oiseau, which is it's our fanciful name for a wine that we do. So Oiseau means bird in French, and our little hero mascot is the bird. So we're talking about two French whites. We blend together and make it very food friendly, very aggressive. I think that's a nice friendly white wine that would go with just about everything that you can think of. I'm not saying that for business purposes. I just think it's a lovely wine.
All right. Take a second to plug your vineyard, your winery for a second. Tell people where they can go and how they can find your wines.
Geographically, we're in Stonewall, Texas. Hilney Cellars is the name of the winery. We're right across the way from Dr. Becker, Becker Vineyards. We're about 3 miles from the Chevron, the one stop there, small town, USA. And if you come from Austin, you head west. If you come from San Antonio, you head north. And again, Hilney Wines, Hilney Cellars, HilneyWine.com. That's H-I-L as in Larry, M as in Mary. Why, the word wine, singular.com.
Just remember that why. Okay, well, I really appreciate you being here, Eric.
Well, thanks for
having
me.
And you talked about Dr. Becker. You're sitting right across from him. He'll be up in just a second. Before that, it's going to be John Rivenberg from Bending Branch Winery. That's up next. We'll be back with more Grape Encounters Radio right after this.
You're having a Grape Encounter with David Wilson. What a way to spend the day.
We're all guilty of sin. We open a costly bottle of wine and recork it with the intent of drinking the rest later. But later comes and goes, and that delicious wine also goes. South, that is. The Coravin is the most reliable way to enjoy your wine without any concern about the unconsumed wine going bad. And while the Coravin wine access system costs a bit more than other preservation systems, it does something they don't. It works. Perfectly. The Coravin is a beautifully engineered handheld device that gives you access to your wine through a small needle that you gently push straight through the cork. Inert argon gas is injected into the bottle, while as little or as much of the wine that you want flows right into your glass. The argon gas keeps your wine so safe, it's as though you never opened the bottle. Want to learn more? Simply click the Coravin link online at grapeencounters.com. A wine is a terrible thing to waste. Get your Coravin at grapeencounters.com.
If you'd like to hear more no-nonsense talk about wine and all the fun that goes with it, check out winetalkshow.com. At winetalkshow.com, you'll find a massive library of content for fun-loving, unpretentious people who aren't afraid to step outside the lines and challenge conventional wisdom. We'll take you places you've never been before. That's a promise. Expand your wine horizons in unimaginable ways at winetalkshow.com.
As a Grape Encounterist, you know how much fun an hour of conversation about wine can be each week. But there's no way we can pack everything into a show. Listeners just like you are turning the Grape Encounters Radio Facebook group into an incredible online community where like-minded wine lovers converse, share information, and inspire each other with posts on a variety of interesting topics. If you haven't discovered your community, join in today on Facebook by entering Grape Encounters Radio.
And now, Grape Encounters with David Wilson continues.
Coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas at Napa Flats, a fantastic restaurant. I have the privilege now of talking to some of the fantastic winemakers from this region. And next up with me is John Rivenberg, who is with you're the founding father of Bending Branch Winery, right?
I am, along with my father-in-law, Bob Young.
Yeah. How did that happen?
You know, some would say insanity. Others would say serendipity. My wife and I met, and being a young guy in the hill country that liked wines and having a father-in-law who was a big fan of wines, it just kind of worked out. He and I would drink wines and head around the hill country, and one day he kind of said, you know, John, I think we can do this as well, if not better, than anybody else. Would you like to try it? And I said, it's better than having a real job, so let's do it.
Now, was there ever any temptation to do wine someplace other than Texas?
Well, we started out with a mentor and consultant early on, and we're rolling into our seventh vintage in two coasts, if you will. So we make wine on the West Coast as well as here in Texas.
Yeah, you're hanging out in my neck of the woods.
Yeah.
So I was surprised to hear about that, but you're growing grapes or getting grapes. I'm not sure which. Are they your grapes?
Well,
or?
We have contract vineyards in California.
I see.
In the Sierra Foothills, in Napa, in Paso Robles. We've got some varietals there in Lodi as well. Yeah.
So tell me what kind of varietals you would likely bring to Texas from other places, and why?
Well, we've been the champions of a lot of really interesting varietals here in the state. I'm happy to hear that about 20 of my colleagues are all now planting Tannat.
Yes.
Following behind us, we planted Tannat several years ago. Probably made the state's first single varietal Tannat, labeled as Tannat. So Tannat is one. A couple new varietals that I'm very, very excited about are Charbono, the original French clone Charbono, not the Italian, Bonarda,
right.
And also Sagrantino. Sagrantino has just lit up like wildfire here in Texas. It's
growing. You've just named
so
three
well.
Grapes that I think are going to be on the hot list soon.
I agree.
Tell me the level of loyalty that Texas wine drinkers have to Texas wines and how much acceptance these wines are getting as time goes on. Because it's true, I think, in every emerging wine region. You're certainly not an emerging one. You've been making wines here for a long time. But your wines are definitely catching on. And I just wonder if people are starting to go now, wow,
yeah,
this is really, you know, this is way better than that stuff they get from that other state.
I would say purely from a business standpoint, you've got folks like the two gentlemen I'm sitting here next to making and selling thousands of cases right out of a tasting room without ever having to worry about it. I can tell you we're a little off the beaten path, and we're selling out of all of our wines every year, and we are at about 3% distribution of the, you know, 6,000 or 7,000 cases we have in sales right now.
That's wonderful.
And there's wineries in California that would chop off their left arm to have those kind of sales or direct to the public.
No, they wouldn't do that because they can't pick grapes with just one arm.
Well, they don't pick grapes.
You bring up a really interesting point, though. The amount of direct sales that we now see, direct from winery to consumer sales, I think is exciting. And maybe we have the internet to thank in part for that, because people are able to discover the wineries better than they used to, which means a lot less dependency on marketing and also a lot less dependency on distributors as well.
Yeah, I would say that. But I mean, you know, in any model you're going to go into, if you're going to grow a winery in the state of Texas, just geographically above 20,000 cases or 30,000 cases, let's say, you're going to have to go into distribution.
Yeah.
You're not going to monetarily be able to have a fleet of trucks and drivers and manage in and out of stores all the time. So, but the beautiful thing we do have is we've got very loyal Texas customers, and we can build wine clubs very fast, and we have customers that come back time and time again. The beautiful thing, it could be a plus and a minus that we have here in Texas, is the loyalty of our customers. Right? And our quote-unquote fan base for our wines. I think that we, like no other region in the country, are not getting the notoriety outside the state because, quite honestly, our wines are sold to people within a 200-mile radius of our operating businesses, and people from outside the state don't generally see them, right? So we're not having distribute wines like California does. And I have a beautiful way of looking at this because I operate in two different states. So I get to look at this from a California standpoint as an operator, and both is from a Texas standpoint. And I think one of the biggest hurdles slash benefits that we've had is the fact that 99% of the wine sold in Texas is sold to Texans, right? And 1% is sold to folks coming to visit our great state. In the last few years, a couple of great things have happened. Wine enthusiasts named us one of the top three wine regions in the world for 2014.
Yep, sure did.
For the fourth year in a row, Orbitz has named us the second most wine visited destination for tourism in the U.S. behind Napa and before Sonoma, before Paso, before all these other regions.
That's good company.
It's good. It's great. Are you kidding? That is fantastic company. You want to be right next to that guy. And so on the other side of that, as a hurdle, us not getting the outside view of us being distribution around the U.S. makes it a harder sell outside the state.
So if there are 10 squares and one is beginning and 10 is the end all to beat all, what square do you think that you're on right now and what square do you want to finish on?
Wow, that's a really good question. I would say we're probably somewhere in the middle of the road. I think we've hit a very dynamic tipping point in the state with our wines and our winemakers.
Yeah, I do too.
And I think that things like Mr. Ray Isle, a few weeks ago, editor from Food & Wine magazine, called Texas the next California and called out a couple of great wines from the Hill Country, including ours. And so I think that when you're starting to be noticed by folks like that of that caliber and like yourself being here in Texas having this radio show, I think that's really going to get us where we need to be. And of course, we all want to be at 10.
You know what? I'm going to end it with this. There is great wine being made everywhere, and it takes talent and also, I think, an understanding of what grows well in a particular area. And if you have those two things down, you're going to make great wine, and they're all going to be different, and they're all going to be good. It's all a question of what you love, and Texas is making some dang good wine here, so there.
Thank you very much.
Does that pretty well sum it up?
That's pretty well
sum it up. So when you come out here, see John at Bending Branch Winery website.
BendingBranchWinery.com.
All right. Yeah. And now we're going to have up somebody who many consider to be the grand poobah of wine in this area?
I will say, I want to give one shout out to Dr. Becker and his lovely wife, Bunny, who's here with us as well. We would not be here without the foundation that Dr. Becker laid and to allow us to follow in his footsteps.
I wondered why both of you guys went so fast for his ring. All right. We'll be back with more Grape Encounters from San Antonio, Texas, right after this.
You are listening to Grape Encounters Radio with David Wilson.
If you love wine, then you probably love to travel, too. And there are two places you should really visit soon. The best part is, you don't even have to pack a bag or leave your house. If you're looking for adventures in wine, log on to GrapeEncounters.com. There you'll find an audio library of more than 300 stories that will take you virtually anywhere you want to go. At GrapeEncounters.com, you'll find short subjects as well as full stories. All audio can be downloaded with one click, and you'll be amazed at the broad range of subject matter. Another place you really should visit is our Facebook group page. Simply search for Grape Encounters Radio or click on the link on our website. The Grape Encounters Radio group has become a formidable place for wine lovers to exchange ideas, introduce products, and share upcoming events. If you're not already a group member, then join the party on Facebook. Grape Encounters is more than a radio broadcast. It's a family of like-minded, fun-loving, unpretentious wine lovers. Come fill up your glass today.
Grape Encounters Radio is always on the lookout for great story ideas, even if they're completely and totally off the wall. So here's the deal. Share your story ideas with me or send a question you'd like to hear answered on the show. If I use your question or suggestion, I'll send you a special gift from EpicStyle.com. I want to know what you want to know. You can contact me on the Grape Encounters Radio group page on Facebook or email david@grapeencountersradio.com. If you've got something for me, I've got something for you.
We're all guilty of sin. We open a costly bottle of wine and recork it with the intent of drinking the rest later. But later comes and goes, and that delicious wine also goes. South, that is. The Coravin is the most reliable way to enjoy your wine without any concern about the wine going bad. And while the Coravin wine access system costs a little bit more than other preservation systems, it does something they don't. It works. Learn more about the Coravin at GrapeEncounters.com. GrapeEncounters.com. Now, back to Grape Encounters with David Wilson.
A bottle of red, a bottle of whites. It all depends upon your appetite. You anytime you want in our Italian restaurant.
Yeah, bottle of red, bottle of white, except that I don't have either in front of me. I do have a bottle of pink sitting in front of me. And that bottle, courtesy of Dr. Becker, Becker Vineyards. As you heard just a few moments ago, there are many, if not most, who think there wouldn't be wine being made in this region if it weren't for Dr. Becker. That's pretty high praise, but you've gotten some praise that I'm going to share from some other corners as well.
Thank you.
So you're still a practicing doctor?
Yes, uh-huh.
Yeah, most people give that up and then make wine.
As I said, our kids call it Chateau Shoestring. and so this had to work for us financially. We had to make this work, and that's been one of our motivations.
So how many years have you been going at it now? It's been a while for you.
We bought the property in 1990. Started planting grapes in 92.
That's 25 years ago.
I know. First harvest, 95. And here, 1,500 cases.
That's not bad.
Not bad. My wife is a Scot. She walked in the back of the winery, saw 1,500 cases on pallets, said, "You will never, ever sell 1,500 cases. You better start drinking." So.
Well, you know, when you walk into a really big winery that's making, 100,000 cases of wine, which is very common in California,
right,
and other places as well, it's staggering. Staggering is a bad choice of word when you're talking about wine, but it's staggering to see that much wine and to think it's all going to get sold and that somebody in the media is going to run a story that says that there's going to be a wine shortage. Like, how is that possible?
That's a good question.
It was an interesting end of the last conversation talking about, drinking Texas wines and where are those Texas wines going to. Clearly, most of that consumption has to be in this state because we don't see a heck of a lot of it on the what we call left coast. And I don't know how far those wines get out of the state, but I'm guessing that most are consumed
within the state of Texas.
Well, our production has grown over 20 years based on sales. And so we never increased production unless we sold all of our wine. We sold all of our wine every year. And last year we made 104,000 cases and sold all of that in Texas. And that did not saturate the Texas market. So the California winemakers will tell you Texas is maybe their favorite or second favorite market in the United States.
Yeah.
Texans like wine. They like good wine. They like things Texan and like many places. So that's been good for us.
What do you think the ultimate capacity of Texas wine production could be?
Well, you know, it's a fraction. We have
tiny right now.
Yeah, it's tiny. We have 4,000 acres of vineyard, and California has hundreds of thousands.
That even seems low to me.
Yeah, yeah. So it may be 900,000, I think I read. But so I think I think the market is there. What I'm so proud of is the performance of the Texas wines in the San Francisco wine competition the last 3 years. We've won an inordinate percentage of the double gold and gold medals for a very small number of wineries and acres of grapes against California and the rest of the world. So what that means to me is that it's possible to make, or to try to make great wine here, which is what the three of us all care about.
Well, I think the mistake that we all make is, maybe you and I don't make it, but I don't even serve wine at a dinner party unless the label's covered up, because I'm a strong advocate of judging the wine on the basis of what the wine really is, mm-hmm. not what the price tag says about the wine, not what the AVA or the state or anything says about the wine. The wine is either going to speak to me in a good way or in a bad way, or maybe not at all. And I'm going to judge it, and I'm going to drink it based on that.
Well, I couldn't agree more. Anybody can buy 82 Petrus, you know, and put it on the table. But there are wines as good as 82 Petrus for 1/100th of the cost. And that's the challenge to people that are knowledgeable about wine, to find those. And as you say, serve them blind. That's a great idea.
Well, to take that thought even a little further, even if that Petrus is, you know, by most accounts the best wine in the world, it might not suit his palate or her palate or their palate.
Exactly.
They may not like it.
Right.
My father loves liver and onions,
mm-hmm.
but you couldn't pay me to eat liver and onions. You know, I used to take it away from the dinner table stuffed in my sock. So I always tell people, if you're genuinely in love with that $3 bottle of wine or that $4 bottle of wine, but it has to be love, real love. If you really love that bottle of wine, I don't know that there's a lot of logic
mm-hmm.
when it comes to trying to get them to drink something more expensive. Because there are a lot of us in the wine business who go, oh, just try it. You're going to really like this even more. I don't know that that's fair to the person.
Yeah, I agree.
So tell me what you drink besides your own wines. What do you like to drink?
Well, I love the wines made by these guys. Unfortunately.
Texas Love Fest going on here.
But I love French wine.
French wine.
And we love Chablis, and we tend to have, I love Village Chablis. I love the Drouin, Jean-Paul and Benoît yep. Drouin's Village Chablis. I think it's one of the great bargains and wines on the planet.
Would you describe yourself as more old world than new world?
Yeah, but there's more comparison between the Texas wine and the old world wine than California. And every time we have a French winemaker at our property, they always want to go out in the vineyard, and we always have a bet about how long it'll be before they get down on one knee, get a handful of the dirt, and smell the dirt. And they always say, bon. So there's, you know, our soil is different from the soil in Napa.
You hope they say bon.
But so far they have.
So far they have.
Yes.
All right. So there was a story that was done about you in Forbes magazine that...
I haven't seen it.
You haven't seen the story?
No.
You didn't know you were written about in Forbes magazine? All right.
I'm glad to hear it. I hope it's favorable.
Oh, this was written back in August of 2010. You don't know about this story?
Uh-oh.
All right. So this is Christopher Hellman. And he starts out. He says, we all have those projects that we want to get around to but never quite find the time. For 3 years now, on a shelf in my office has stood one of those inner office envelopes with Becker Vineyard scrawled across it. I've been meaning to write about Dr. Richard Becker. That is you, right?
Yeah,
okay.
Good day, yeah.
This is Forbes magazine. You didn't know you were written about. I'm glad I could do this.
I've been meaning to write about him ever since February 2007 when I spent an afternoon drinking wine with him at Becker Vineyards just outside of Fredericksburg, Texas. What triggered me to pull out that file and write about Becker tonight was the second delicious bottle of his wine that I've opened this week, a 2008 Cabernet Syrah blend. Over the weekend, we had the 2008 Prairie Roti.
Yes.
A Rhone-style blend dominated by Mourvèdre. All grapes grown in Texas. He says, today's wine made that ribeye and cucumber salad so good, I couldn't hold off any longer. A good bottle of wine has a way of rearranging your priorities. And then he goes on to say that you are making the best wine in Texas.
Well, now I'm challenged. You see these guys over here, but it's been, that's the fun of it. You know, I mean, and Texans, if nothing else, are competitive people.
All right, look, you are challenged, Dr. Becker, because you've managed to get away with not sending him a thank you note for 5 years.
Well, I will now.
That is amazing. I'm sitting with Dr. Richard Becker of Becker Vineyards just outside of Fredericksburg. Man, I'll tell you what, if you're listening to this show outside of San Antonio, you need to make Texas one of your wine journeys. It makes sense to take a wine trip to Texas. And, you know, people think about going to a lot of other places besides Texas. But Texas is getting a lot of accolades for their wine business, not the least of which come from the efforts of people like Dr. Becker, who's been at it for some time. So I was surprised you didn't know about that Forbes quote. He had some other nice things to say. Well, here's how he describes you, by the way. Author Christopher Hellman, he says, Becker is a bookish endocrinologist who can quote Wallace Stevens' poem, 13 Ways of Looking at a Blackbird. And he says, every time I open a bottle of Becker's wine, I think of something he told me about how he had an olfactory memory for wines that corresponds to the tactile memory he has for his patients' thyroid lumps. No winemaker has ever had that written about them before.
Well, let me tell you what that is. You know, a pianist will tell you that if they can't, they're having trouble remembering the notes. Once they get their hands on the keyboard, it's there. So if you spend a lot of time examining thyroid nodules.
I don't.
But your fingers have a memory that wakes up some spot in the brain. And the same thing happens with tasting wine. And I can taste a wine that I haven't tasted for 10 or 15 years, and then that light comes on, and I remember it. And is that tested? Is that science? Do we know if that's true? I can't attest to that, but I can tell you it happens to me all the time.
So this is an interesting...
And I think that's key to winemaking.
Interesting association. So you're saying that, and all kidding aside, you're saying that when you feel a thyroid lump with your fingers, you learn and know things about that. That has taken a career to learn to...
Well, that I didn't know, I didn't remember until I put my fingers back on them, on the nodule.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think what's going to have to happen is tomorrow I'm going to head out to your place. We'll stop at your comrades' places as well.
I recommend
it. Maybe we can go a little deeper because there's not that much that we can do in an hour, but we can do an awful lot of damage in an afternoon.
Okay.
Are you game for that?
I'm good for it.
It is David Wilson coming to you from Napa Flats in San Antonio, Texas. Strange, next week I'm going to be touring from Northern California to Southern California with a delegation of Greek winemakers. I was just named the U.S. ambassador to the wines of Knousa, Greece. So today I'm wearing boots. Next week I'm going to be wearing a toga, if you can imagine that. No, that's not true. I want to reflect back to my very first experience with Texas wine because I had a chance to go visit the town of McKinney, Texas, just I think it's northeast of Dallas. And it was there that I met up with a winemaker and his staff who were, well, let's just say they were dissing California wine. And as you mostly know, I am from California. So we created a challenge, and the challenge was something that we called the Sipper Bowl, or also Wine Wars. Well, one thing led to another, and we set up a challenge in the little town of Los Olivos on the central coast of California, where it would be Texas wines versus California wines. Now, California makes 90% of the wine that we consume here in the U.S., and Texas makes a little bit less than that. But Texas has a lot of pride in their winemaking, and so the challenge was on. What we did was we did a blind tasting. Each team was to select their favorite red and their favorite white. It didn't matter what the varietal was. It was just whatever you thought the public would like best, because we were going to have no professional judges in this tasting competition. It was simply going to be people. And a funny thing happened out there on that beautiful spring California day. There were more Texans that showed up than Californians. There were people that were running down Main Street of Los Olivos with the Texas flag hanging out the back window of their car. It was absolutely amazing. And we had over 500 people come to that live broadcast, the only other Texas broadcast I've ever done, but done in California. And when the dust had lifted and they saw what had occurred, the Texas winemakers won in the white competition, blind competition, and the California winemaker won in the red competition. We're going to be back in just a moment with more Grape Encounters, and we'll continue from San Antonio, Texas, right after this.
Unpretentious, unconventional, and uncorked. This is Grape Encounters Radio.
Looks like it's you and me, Mr. Merlot. I've got a glass and 7 hours to go.
Guilty as sin. We open a costly bottle of wine and recork it with the intent of drinking the rest later. But later comes and goes, and that delicious wine also goes. South, that is. The Coravin is the most reliable way to enjoy your wine without any concern about the wine going bad. And while the Coravin wine access system costs a little bit more than other preservation systems, it does something they don't. It works. Learn more about the Coravin at GrapeEncounters.com. GrapeEncounters.com.
Grape Encounters Radio is always on the lookout for great story ideas, even if they're completely and totally off the wall. So here's the deal. Share your story ideas with me or send a question you'd like to hear answered on the show. If I use your question or suggestion, I'll send you a special gift from EpicStyle.com. I want to know what you want to know. You can contact me on the Grape Encounters Radio group page on Facebook or email david@grapeencountersradio.com. If you've got something for me, I've got something for you.
If you love wine, then you probably love to travel, too. And there are two places you should really visit soon. The best part is, you don't even have to pack a bag or leave your house. If you're looking for adventures in wine, log on to GrapeEncounters.com. There you'll find an audio library of more than 300 stories that will take you virtually anywhere you want to go. At GrapeEncounters.com, you'll find short subjects as well as full stories. All audio can be downloaded with one click, and you'll be amazed at the broad range of subject matter. Another place you really should visit is our Facebook group page. Simply search for Grape Encounters Radio or click on the link on our website. The Grape Encounters Radio group has become a formidable place for wine lovers to exchange ideas, introduce products, and share upcoming events. If you're not already a group member, then join the party on Facebook. Grape Encounters is more than a radio broadcast. It's a family of like-minded, fun-loving, unpretentious wine lovers. Come fill up your glass today.
He's setting down the wine glass and picking up the microphone. Here's your Grape Encounters host, David Wilson.
And time for Sipping with Sarah. Sarah, you are probably, I imagine, I've never been in the tasting room with you.
That's
but,
true.
But I'm guessing that you are Miss Manners in a tasting room.
Is that true or not?
Or do you actually get up on the bar and dance?
I haven't done any bar dancing. I actually like to be a fly on the wall and watch other people in tasting rooms.
Really?
I do.
Okay. So let's talk today about tasting room etiquette.
Okay.
Because, first of all, the tasting room of today is nothing like the tasting room of 20 years
no,
ago.
No, not at all.
Completely different. And things have loosened up a lot. Because I used to hate to go into tasting rooms because it was like, oh my gosh, I was afraid to open my mouth. Because there was always that guy there who was trying to impress his girlfriend.
And he knew
brought
more
her
than
there
you
in
did.
The Porsche that he rented from the exotic car rental place. And then he would throw out lingo that nobody understood. And that was the last date she ever went on with him.
I think a few people still use wine tasting and visiting wine regions to sort of pump up their egos. But I think that's a smaller and smaller piece of the pie. And most people who go out wine tasting are just seriously interested, and serious is probably the wrong word. They're out to enjoy themselves discovering.
Well, one of the things that has changed in the tasting room world is the word tasting, because a lot of tasting rooms now offer you the opportunity to buy a glass of wine. And
that's true.
You can go sit out on some beautiful patio, you know, with water trickling in a fountain, and they've created wonderful environments. They have cheese and charcuterie plates that they offer.
Buy the bottle and take it out on
the
patio.
Yes, that's become a very popular theme. And I do think tasting rooms have become a lot more like, say, Barnes & Noble and Starbucks, in the sense that businesses used to want you to come, spend your money, and go. And now the theme is come and stay as long as you like.
You know, I think there's been so much research on marketing wine through tasting rooms in a way, and how people behave in tasting rooms. So behind the business is that wineries make a lot more money on bottles they sell directly to their customers in the tasting room than bottles that go through the distribution system where middlemen get the cuts. So it's become a more and more important part of their business model. And I think that they figured out that the longer people hang out in their space, the more wine they're likely to take away with
them.
Well,
and this is almost going to sound derogatory, but it's really not meant to be. There is a camaraderie, I think, that wineries now are trying to build with their customers, and that naturally translates into wine club members.
Yes, it does.
You know, the people come to like the people that are associated with the winery. And what's not to like? Yeah. Because people who work in wineries tend to be really nice people.
They are nice people.
You know, they got a great job.
And the building relationships is what they're there for.
And why not? And why not join the club? Although I will say this, that before you join the wine club, because a lot of people join wine clubs out of guilt, and a lot of people join wine clubs because they've been to the tasting room, they've enjoyed the wines, and now they're lured in by the 30% discount that they're going to get on that case of wine if they join the wine club and take three deliveries, which is going to totally eat up the 30% discount that you're going to get. So be a little careful of that.
The pressure of the moment is high. That's for sure.
But I'm glad that tasting rooms mostly charge now. Because you know what? No guilt. It's like, I paid for it. I paid for the taste. If I don't like the wine, I'm going to go. You don't write my name down. Don't take my picture. Don't badmouth me on Facebook.
I completely agree. I'm happy to pay for tasting. And it's also a way for them to pull out the frat parties and the bridesmaids parties that are just there to party.
A tasting room is not a party room, although a lot of wineries now have places for you to laugh and giggle and have fun and create experiences.
Sure. I actually think one of the great things wineries have learned is that people come for different levels of tasting and experiences, and one size doesn't fit all. I think wineries have figured out that they can have a sit-down guided tasting. They can have a sit-down served but not guided tasting. They can have tasting just at the bar, or they can have a whole food experience. There are a couple of old wineries up in Oregon in the Willamette Valley who have opened these new tasting rooms that offer just tiers of experiences in different spaces, and everybody's having a good time. I'm thinking of Ponzi, old Oregon name, and Sokol Blosser, also an old Oregon name, and they both have just sleek new high design tasting rooms.
A lot of these old wineries are reinventing themselves.
Right.
Which is very exciting. All right, let's do this. I want to play a little game with you. So we're going to do tasting room do's and don'ts.
Okay.
And you can say do or don't, and I'll have to give you a do or a don't in a tasting room, okay?
Okay.
Are you ready?
Okay.
Don't.
Don't get drunk.
Oh, absolutely.
That is the worst possible etiquette. That's my number one.
Okay, your turn.
Do.
Spit.
Related to number one.
Yeah. Definitely spit. especially if you don't like it. Look, at you know what? Don't think that because you paid $10 or $20 for the tasting experience that you have to swallow every drop. Don't.
Don't bring your kids and ignore them in the tasting room and let them run around bothering everybody else.
I was going to say don't have kids.
Oh, dear.
You're going to be a wine lover.
No. It's too late for me.
No, sorry. Okay, your turn.
Don't.
Don't brush your teeth, chew gum, gargle, or use cologne when going to a tasting room.
That is four or five good ones. Absolutely.
All true.
All true, especially that scent thing. Don't even wash your hands with scented soap that's going to bother, that put lavender in the neighbor's wine.
Do.
Do treat the people pouring behind the bar as the experts on the wine and not yourself. I've seen so many people belly up to the bar and start asking questions that are just calculated to let everybody in the room know how much they know. And honestly, nobody knows. You may know a lot about wine, but you don't know the specifics of this wine. Trust the people behind the bar. That's
okay.
Right.
All right. I think that was very constructive, Sarah.
I feel instructed.
All right. Very good. All right. That's going to do it for Grape Encounters today. That was fun. Sarah, I say we go wine tasting right now.
I'm ready.
Okay. We'll see y'all next week.
You never know what part of the country or the world the Grape Encounters microphones will take you to. Don't miss a single experience. Your Grape Encounter isn't over. We're just taking a breather until next week's edition.